This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
In Kansas anymore.
Hey, Daddy, I want an Oompa Loompa. I want you to get me an Oompa Loompa right away.
All right, Ruka, all right. I'll get you one before the day's out.
I want an Oompa Loompa now!
E.T. phone home.
Come on, Dover! Move your blooming ass!
To infinity and beyond!
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
La la la, la la la. La la la, la la.
Lisa, I want some more.
What is it you can't face?
In every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. You find the fun, and snap! The job's a game.
Welcome to the Casting Couch. My name is Thomas Caldwell. Alan Tuxford is panelling and producing once more. A big thank you to Lisa and Sue for looking after the Women's Zone. Another 2 hours of always brilliant music. And cheers to Helen for taking care of the news for us. Now, I'm joined today in the studio by a new guest presenter. Her name is Kylie Eddy.
Hi, how are you, Thomas?
I'm very well. How are you? It's great to be sharing the microphone with you.
Well, we've got our own microphones. I don't want to get too close to you on our first time co-hosting together.
We'll
save that for next week, maybe.
We'll keep this distance going. It's safe. It's comfortable. Now, Kylie, this is your first time on the Casting Couch, but by no means are you a stranger to Joy. You've been around these studios before. Where may our listeners have heard you?
The hallowed halls of Joy.
Yeah.
Yes, back when we were in a shoebox in South Melbourne, I co-hosted a show called The Red Carpet, which, funny enough, also had a movie theme. I don't know what that says about me and what I do in my spare time.
Well, let's get into that.
It's a hint.
Let's get into that. You're a filmmaker yourself.
Yes, I am, though.
Writer, director, producer?
Yeah. Just call me an auteur. Auteur, darling. I haven't made a film for a couple of years now because my last film bankrupted me morally, emotionally, financially.
That's the nasty one, yeah.
Yes, so I made a low-budget indie lesbian feature film a couple of years ago called This Kiss to the three people who saw it. I love you. Thank you.
But you know what these failures are all about. It's a stepping stone to something great. It's a learning step.
Are you saying that the failure of my film has brought me to the casting couch where I can just talk about other people's films?
No. You're...
It's very delicate. I love. We're off to a great start.
You're putting me into entrapment already. How long have we been on air together?
And 30
already,
seconds.
Already, you've made me sound like a goose.
That's going to be my job today.
You have fulfilled the role of my co-host perfectly.
What else is there to do?
You also work for the Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
Yes, let's say that straight away. That I am not unbiased when it comes to the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, best queer film festival in the world.
Yeah, we're fairly fond of it on this show.
Yeah, look, I'm the marketing and sponsorship manager there. I have been for coming up. This is my third festival. So it's very exciting. Tickets on sale, 25th of Feb.
25th of Feb. Okay, so you must be exhausted right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a great couple of months over midsummer promoting the festival, and program launch is 24th of Feb, and then we're kicking off the festival 17th of March for 2 weeks of the best queer cinema in the world.
Damn straight. But for the next 2 hours, you're going to talk film with me.
I know.
On the show,
I'm terrified.
You'll be fine. I'm a pussycat, really. On the show today, we'll be talking about the French smash hit A Prophet. Then we're going to be talking about Valentine's Day and The Wolfman. We've also got a couple of what I think are going to be really fascinating interviews. We're going to be speaking with Roberta Chiabara. She's curated a festival of films starring the great Italian bombshell Claudia Cardinale. Really looking forward to discussing those amazing films that Claudia Cardinale starred in. We're also going to be talking to a filmmaker, Richard Frankland. He directed Stone Brothers last year, and he's going to tell us about the Black Knight cinema program that's happening next weekend. Now, Kylie, we like to give stuff away on the couch, but today we've got like really amazing kick-ass prize.
I've heard it's an exclusive just for us.
It's an exclusive to Joy, yeah. It's an exclusive to the Casting Couch as well. No, but it's an exclusive to Joy. This, we are the only place giving away free tickets to see John Waters live.
Okay, oh, it's so exciting.
It's wild. John Waters is kind of the king of trash cinema, who made things like Pink Flamingos and Serial Mum. What are the other ones?
Most recently, A Dirty Shame.
A Dirty Shame, of course. And my favourite, Cry Baby.
I think we might agree on that, actually.
Oh, I adore Cry Baby.
I love it.
Yeah. So John Waters is doing a kind of stand-up show on Saturday, February the 27th. Pretty hard to get tickets to this now, but we're going to be giving away a couple. Now, the way we're going to do this is for the next 1.5 hours, people can get in touch with us. Tell us your favourite John Waters film.
And why.
And why.
And why. We want to know why.
Yeah, we want a proper fan to win this prize.
A proper fan. Now, I don't know how you would say a proper fan. We don't want any streakers. We don't want anyone eating any dog poo.
Yeah.
For those who are big fans of this film will know what I'm talking about.
Exactly. I think you need to be slightly perverse, though.
Yeah,
and
okay.
If you listen to this show on a regular basis, you probably are.
We're speaking to our peeps.
There's something masochistic about you for sure. Okay, you can get... Now, the rules are you do have to be a Joy member or willing to join up on the spot. Now, as many of you know, there's a rule we've got at Joy at the moment where you can't win a prize if you've won something within the last 2 weeks. Now, we have been given permission, because this is such a special prize...
Did we get permission from the Prime Minister?
We're pretty high up in the Joy hierarchy. We've been given permission to waive that if you've won a prize in the past 2 weeks on the Casting Couch.
Only on the Casting Couch, though.
Yeah, exactly. Because we want to look after our very loyal regular listeners. So if you won tickets last week or the week before, you can still win the double pass to John Waters.
If you're a John Waters fan.
Yeah, and a Joy member. Call us.
It's clear as mud.
Call us on 1300-JOY-949, SMS us on 0427-JOY-949, or email onair@joy.org.au. We'll be taking calls until about 6:30. To get us in the mood, though, here is some music from Cry Baby. This is King Cry Baby. You're listening to Thomas and Kylie on the Casting Couch, Joy 94.9. That's the Danish duo The Ravenettes with the song Love in a Trash Can. And since it's the day before Valentine's Day, I thought that kind of song would be appropriate for all of those of you who are feeling the bitter pain of Valentine's Day and being single.
The anti-Valentine's Day show.
Yeah, yeah. You'll pick up a theme with my music over the show.
You're not bitter, are you?
Oh, I'm actually not, but I recall years when I have been. This is for all those people. You're listening to The Casting Couch with Thomas and Kylie. We're going to talk about a film now called A Prophet, or I'm going to try the French pronunciation, Un Prophet. Okay, thanks. Alan, our producer, is just shaking his head.
Is French your native tongue?
You know what? I lived in France for a year.
You did not.
That's the best I can do. It was a dismal failure.
Oh, I'm appalled.
Hey, I first heard about this film about the end of last year when all the European journalists were doing their top films of 2009 lists. This was appearing on a lot of those films. It's come to Australia with quite a lot of anticipation for us arty types anyway. It's a French film about a kid called Malik El Djibena. He's a 19-year-old repeat offender who's just been thrown into prison. And the film kind of like gives birth to him. His entry into the prison is a bit like a birth scene. It starts off very dark and noisy, and suddenly you're hit with this blinding light as he enters prison. And the idea is to introduce him very much as an unborn child. He's a vulnerable blank slate. He has no friends. He's got no family. We see him half naked and we realise he's covered in scars and bruises. He's very vulnerable and he's been in and out of juvenile detention centres most of his life. But now, after assaulting a policeman, he's gone to the big house. And it's really apparent this kid ain't going to survive. It's a tough prison. He's half Arabic and he's half Corsican. The prison is run by the Arab gangsters and the Corsican gangsters. Both of them want nothing to do with him because he's, you know, got this mixed blood. And are people aware what the Corsican, who the Corsicans are?
No, I don't know. Tell me more.
Corsica is like an island province of France down the south. There's a bit of a separatist movement there and they have their own sort of mafia gang activity.
See, living in France did have its benefits.
Yeah, I learned about
this. You know about these things.
I did learn about it. The Gene Hackman film, The French Connection, was all about the Corsican mafia trying to get heroin into America.
Mm.
So, yeah. heavy, heavy people. So this kid's in prison, and very quickly the Corsicans realise that he has access to an Arab prisoner who they want to see dead, and they intimidate and bully and threaten him into committing this murder, otherwise he's going to get it from them. And he really has no choice, and he does so. And so for the rest of the film, it's about him being protected by the Corsicans and how he starts to get into the criminal life himself.
So it's the classic tale of going to prison to become a criminal.
Yeah, no, that's interesting because, I mean, for me, that was very much the point of this film.
Right.
It was really criticising, one, a lot of the prejudices in French society towards different minority groups, and also saying this is absurd that a minor offender kid like this would go into prison and basically learn how to become a brilliant criminal. Curiously, that's not how many of the right-wing media in Europe have read it.
Really?
Yeah.
How have they read it?
They've read it as an example of how crime is out of control because of these ethnic minorities and how they should be tougher on prisoners.
Oh, yeah, because that's really going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. I just love the way people bring their own politics into reading a film.
Well, isn't that part of the fun of it?
It is part of the fun. And look, hell, I'm as guilty as anybody, I suppose. This is essentially a gangster film, but set in a prison. I mean, the storyline is not that different, I suppose, in structure to things like Scarface and Goodfellas and The Godfather. It's about somebody coming up the ranks and becoming quite powerful. However, it's not an action-packed, sensationalised, romantic film. It's got a very strong social realism look to it.
And it's 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, it's long, but you don't feel it.
Really?
You don't. It is a genre film. It's a really good gangster film. And the differences are, rather than using violence, don't get me wrong, the film is violent, but this kid, Malik, he's smart. He uses his smarts and he learns. He starts off illiterate, but he realises quite early if he's going to get anywhere, he needs to get himself educated, and he does all that. There's some strange surreal moments in there as well, where there's a character who dies quite early in the film who keeps sort of popping up as some kind of conscience or guide to him, and all that stuff works really well. The violence that is in this film is quite shocking. None of it's a surprise. There's no sudden kind of bursts of claret on the screen. Everything is built up to, but nevertheless, it's unbearable, some of it. And I do like watching horror films and action films. Mm. Even I was shielding my eyes at some of these scenes.
Is that because it's kind of social realism and it's naturalistically played?
That's exactly what it is. Violence in the real world is horrible, and I really can't stand it and I hate it. And this film plays it real. So there are some genuinely shocking scenes.
Hmm.
Oh, look, I really dug this film. I gave it 4 stars. There's a lot of people about giving it even more than that, but I think don't be put off by the fact that it's 2.5 hours and subtitled.
I'm just speaking for my peeps. That's the first thing I look at with a running time.
And I think that's the way a lot of people are going to respond to this. But look, this is just a really good, tense, taut film, and everybody across the board is saying great things.
Well,
it's not just me.
It has been nominated for Best Film in the Oscars this year as Best Foreign Language Film. It's France's submission, and it's nominated. So it can't be all bad.
Exactly. I think it could win. It also got second prize at Cannes last year. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Now, Carly, we are giving away this rather amazing prize. Can you give us the full spiel? Because I got all mumbled last segment.
Oh, you were too excited about just talking about John Waters' films. So we're giving away a double pass to the brilliantly entertaining filmmaker, writer and shock auteur supremo, John Waters. He's coming to Melbourne for just one show only on Saturday, February 27th, to perform his glorious one-man show. It's called This Filthy World. It's a joyous, devious monologue, you wouldn't expect anything less, on true crime, exploitation films, fashion lunacy, and the extremes of the contemporary art world. Now, limited tickets are still available at theartcentre.com.au, but this is the only place, Joy is the only place where you can win this double pass, exclusively here on the Casting Couch, and it's valued at over $130. Yeah. So this is all thanks to MG Presents. So we're delighted to be giving away this double pass to John Waters. You do have to work for it, though.
You do. We want you to get in touch with us and tell us what your favourite John Waters film is.
It's not that hard.
It's pretty easy. You can SMS us 0427JOY949, phone 1300JOY949, or email onair@joy.org.au. You do need to be a Joy member, but for this special offer, we are waiving the kind of one something 2 weeks previously rule. So come on, get into it. In the meantime, let's get into some more music. It is Valentine's Day tomorrow. I'm playing some slightly quirky sort of love songs. This is a duet by Tom Waits and Bette Midler. Can you believe those two did a song together? Here's the best bit. It's terrific. It's a piece called I Never Talk to Strangers. You're with Thomas and Kylie on the Casting Couch, Joy 94.9. You're back on the casting couch with Thomas and Kylie. Now, Kylie, at the start of this year, I made a New Year's resolution, which was I would not see any films that I was 99% sure that I would hate.
Well, that knocks out a lot of films for me.
And for that reason, I have not gone to see Valentine's Day, but you have done the hard work for me and you've checked it out.
Well, you know what? Am I
foolish in my hesitation to see this
movie? No, I don't think you're foolish. And I have to say, you know, putting my cards on the table, I think this is going to be a great partnership for us because I love romantic comedies. It's one of my favourite genres. Mm. I know you've got your mouth is agape and all the wrong reasons.
But that was me about to get all defensive saying, I like them too, but when they're good.
Well, the thing is, the thing that I think is amazing about romantic comedies is that when they're done well, they are actually a really, really tough genre to get right. And
that's
when they're done, done well, they deliver. But it's really hard to make a good romantic comedy. That's why they fail on so many levels.
500 Days of Summer, would you put that up there as a successful
one? And of course, you have chosen a film that I haven't seen.
Sorry. What about Notting Hill then? That's been one of my favourites
for a long time. Yes, I think Notting Hill is a fantastic example of that kind of, you know, of the genre. But it is very hard to make romantic comedies work because really, if people want to be together these days, they just kind of can be together.
Yeah.
So, you know, that inherent conflict that is essential for romantic comedies is very hard. But Valentine's Day.
Tell us all about it.
I was delighted. Though, a note to self, FYI, maybe don't go and see a film like Valentine's Day in the middle of the day on a Friday with a bunch of teenagers. Very interesting audience reactions. And can I just say that the trailer for Remember Me came on, which stars one Robert Pattinson. And seriously, I thought we were going to have to call an ambulance. Because
from Twilight we're talking about.
From Twilight. Yep. The Twilight girls were absolutely... There were teenagers who were falling apart in the aisle with just Robert Pattinson on the screen.
Really?
Oh, it was crazy. So I'm like, I'm in for a treat. So clearly they were there to see their favourite two Taylors.
Yeah.
Some of the many cast members in this film.
It's huge, the cast list.
Well, it's actually easier to talk about who's not in the film.
Yeah.
Than who's in the film, because it's outrageously long. Just to give you an idea
of
the plot. Gary
Busey's not in it, is he?
Oh, he might have been in the background somewhere. No, he's not in it. But the plot of this film, it's about intertwining couples and singles in Los Angeles that break up and make up over the course of one Valentine's Day. And I can't really go into too much more plot, because there's not any. Mm-hmm. So when you're trying to pack in a whole lot of... It's an ensemble picture. And when you try and pack in that many stories, really the great thing about this is if you don't like one of the stories, guess what? 5 minutes later, doesn't matter because you're onto something else.
It's the strength and weakness of these kind of films, isn't it? They're not all going to be great, but you can brush over the rubbish then.
It is kind of like the Love Actually model, and that's one of my least favourite romantic comedies. Yeah. But I actually think maybe because I had low expectations that Valentine's Day kind of worked.
Oh, really?
It did kind of work. Now, I also just want to say that, you know, you are in the hands of a master with Gary Marshall, who practically invented the romantic comedy with Pretty Woman.
Which is a film, I know I'm kind of on my own with this, but I find repugnant and loathsome.
Well, once you get past all the, the prostitute with the heart of gold, once you get past all of that, you know, it is a pretty...
It follows the formula perfectly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And look, he does love working with Julia Roberts. They've done very well together. He also did Runaway Bride with her, maybe not such a successful outing. And Julia plays a kind of an important character in this as well. In amongst some of my favourite actors, I can pretty much watch Jennifer Garner do anything.
Yeah, sure.
You know, Alias is one of my favourite TV series of all time, and there's another Alias alumni in there, Bradley Cooper, who I loved.
All from The Hangover.
Before The Hangover, I loved him. Yeah. Before, I feel like, you know, so indignant that people have now discovered Bradley, and I loved him before.
You liked him before he was mainstream.
Absolutely. And so both of them are fantastic and so entertaining and great to watch. Mm-hmm. Topher Grace is another one of my favourite young up-and-coming actors.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably best known for his role in Good Company, which is a fantastic little kind of low-budget film. Mm, I love that. I know something
you
don't. Yeah,
you stumped me. I don't know who this person is.
He's a fantastic young actor. I think he's in the Spider-Man 3. He's kind of on the cusp of mainstream, but he is incredibly talented, and he's kind of paired up with Anne Hathaway, who unfortunately cannot match him in this role. And part of it is, I'm not going to give away any you know, huge plot turnarounds, but she plays a secretary / phone sex operator who manages to take phone sex calls on her mobile at work. Now, I'm not quite sure how the business works, but in my mind, I don't know if that's how it works. back in my day.
That's a pity. Ever since Rachel getting married, I've adored Anne Hathaway.
Oh, she's that amazing in
was
that.
A film
amazing.
That blew my mind when it came to her, yeah.
And look, I really, really want to like her.
Then she did Bride Wars and I lost all respect for her again. So it's a tough one.
Oh, it's a tough one. Mm. So, look, so it's great just to see all this cast. They're obviously having a great time. It's fantastic for them because they just get to rock up and, you know, shoot a film for like 3 weeks and get paid who knows what to kind of make this whole kind of thing work. There is a same-sex subplot. I don't want to give it away. So there is something, but when you see it in amongst all the straight couples who are madly, passionately being able to do whatever they want and it's very chaste, you know they want to keep it mainstream. So that's a bit sad, but at least it's in there. And overall, some stories are stronger than others.
Mm-hmm.
But if you check your brain at the door and just go in with an open heart, then I can recommend Valentine's Day with someone who you love. Not alone in a cinema full of teenagers, but, you know, that's my... I'm giving it 2.5 out of 5 for being middle of the road.
Fantastic. That was Kylie reviewing Valentine's Day. Up next, we're going to be talking about the cinema of Claudia Cardinale. You're on the Cast and Couch. This is Joy 94.9, and we're going to listen to a duet between Iggy Pop and Kate Pearson. That's some of Nino Rota's music from The Leopard. Absolutely gorgeous music for an incredibly gorgeous film. That was by Visconti in 1963. And it's one of those films that I just get the shivers about talking about it because it's just such an incredible masterpiece. You're on the casting couch here on Joy 94.9 with Thomas and Kylie. And the reason I'm talking about a Visconti film is because it stars this extraordinary woman called Claudia Cardinale, who was the Italian bombshell of the 1960s, and a whole season of films has been dedicated to her extraordinary oeuvre. Did I say oeuvre right? It always makes
not
me
if
think
you're
of
it in
eggs.
French. What is oeuvre? Something like that.
Yeah, oh, me and foreign words. Listeners will know they don't match up well. I'm talking to Roberta Chiabara. How's that with foreign pronunciation?
That's pretty good.
Good. You've curated this extraordinary collection of films that all star Claudia Cardinale.
Mm-hmm.
Now, apart from the fact that it's just a terrific excuse to put a whole lot of amazing films together.
Well, that's the basic
thing. That was the basic thing. Well, tell us a little bit about Claudia Cardinale. Well, how did she capture people's imaginations? Because all these art house, these big European art house directors like Fellini and Herzog and Visconti, really went nuts for her.
They did. They adored her.
Mm.
And she did like to work with directors who she had that kind of relationship with. She really gave herself over to her directors had a lifelong friendship with both Visconti and Sergio Leone. So she...
Another great Italian director, of course.
Indeed,
yes.
Indeed. And we have his Once Upon a Time in the West in our season. Curiously enough, she actually wasn't born in Italy. She was born in Tunisia, which I can never say. Her grandparents were Sicilian, and so she grew up speaking French.
Okay.
And won a beauty pageant during a week of Italian cultural celebrations. She won a pageant and was sashed the most beautiful Italian girl in Tunisia. And the first prize was a trip to the Venice Film Festival, where she caught the attention, not surprisingly, of a number of Italian, well, just producers in general, but Italian producers in particular, one of whom, Franco Cristaldi, signed her exclusively to his production company, oversaw her career for a number of years and married her in 1966. He was that besotted. So she talks about him as a very controlling person in her life, and it sounds like she really came into her own in terms of any kind of autonomy when that relationship broke up in the mid-70s. But whatever she may say about him, you know, she had a contract where she couldn't put on weight, she couldn't cut her hair. He installed a driver and a personal assistant and a few other people so that her life was completely controlled by him. But he also navigated her through her early career, and it was his strategy to basically have her work with the most famous and respected auteurs of the time in small roles so she could skill up as an actress and then find her way. And it was a beautiful strategy because with Visconti, for example, she had a small role in Rocco and His Brothers,
yes,
the film from 1960 that we probably remember for Alain Delon's electric performance. Claudia had a small role in that, but it was enough for Visconti to just sort of test her mettle as an actress, and then he brought her back, of course, for The Leopard in 1963, which
because she's a real core part of The Leopard, isn't she?
Yeah, it was a star-making role, and basically it's
opposite
that,
Burt Lancaster.
Exactly, it's the triangle between her and Burt Lancaster and Alain Delon. So a lot of star power there. But it actually, by that stage, she was well established as an actress in just, you know, the space of 3 years or so, which is no mean feat, given how distracting other things like her obvious beauty and photogenic qualities were.
Yeah. So there's The Leopard. Now, the other really significant film that you're showing that she's in is 8 and a Half, which was made in the same year,
I believe. Same year, with Fellini, yes. So she went from, like, the rigour of Visconti's set to the sort of wonderful improvisational qualities that Fellini brought to filmmaking.
And did she, it's been years since I've seen 8 and a Half, but she played herself, didn't she?
Yeah, it was wonderful. She was cast as Claudia, a young actress. And it's great because you see her in the Fellini film, in the film within the film, where she is Claudia acting, and then at the end of the film you finally see her in this wonderful scene with Marcello Mastroianni where she is Claudia offset as herself. And she's just gorgeous. So, and it's also the first time Italian audiences heard her own speaking voice because
she was dubbed previously, wasn't she?
She was dubbed previously and occasionally afterwards as well. Although by the time she was really established as an actress, I think once people, you know, became familiar with her voice, they insisted on hearing that voice. It was part of her persona. But yeah, prior to 8 and a Half, she was dubbed by Italian actresses because, you know, various things. Her Italian was French inflected, so there was a bit of an accent coming through. And also just
that was a bad thing.
I know.
They considered that a problem. Wow.
And also just she had that wonderful, you know, deep-throated kind of husky quality, which Fellini adored and quite sensibly said, that's great. That's part of who she is. I want audiences to hear that. So it paved the way for her.
We were just talking off air about 9, which we all sort of agreed was didn't really live up to expectations. This was
charmless.
Yeah, very much so. Who is there? Any of the actors in 9 play her part?
Yes. Well, yes.
Or sort of.
in a manner. Yes. Nicole Kidman, our very own.
Yep.
In the Claudia Jensen, they give her this surname Jensen in 9. Is the muse that Claudia plays in the Fellini film in 8 and a Half. It was one of the problems I had with the film, among a variety of problems. This is 9 I'm speaking of.
Yeah.
In that I found, in terms of casting, that seemed a strange choice. And I think rather more the filmmakers were modelling that role on Anita Ekberg's role in La Dolce Vita, Fellini's film from 1960.
There was a mash of Fellini stuff in 8 and a Half, in 9, wasn't there?
There was, but, you know, in all other respects, that was a remake of 8 and a Half, and some of the scenes they lifted just absolutely from the original, right down to certain shot sequences.
Sucked the life out of them somehow.
And yes, yeah, they did that, and they just confused me with this kind of strange composite character.
You're also talking about the Italians. You're also showing Once Upon a Time in the West, which we spoke about quite a bit last year when we interviewed Sir Christopher Frayling all about Sergio Leone.
Oh, yeah.
She, again, sort of is a real essential kind of core cast of characters in that film, four very important personalities, and she's one of them, and she holds her own. She's tough.
She sure does hold her own. She has something the Italians call grinta.
Ooh, say that again.
Grinta.
Sensational.
Which is, it's not quite... Oh, it's hard to translate. Let's see. Just guts.
Yeah.
Steely determination. It's a good word, and she has it in spades. And it's only the only time I think Leone gives a female character primacy in his films.
His films are very masculine, and she really stands out in Once Upon a Time in the West for that quality. I didn't realise that she's in The Pink Panther, which is part of your programme, as are all the films we're discussing.
Yes, that was her first appearance in an American-produced film, with Blake Edwards directing, of course, although she didn't have to go too far from home to make it, because it was actually, for the most part, shot in Italy and in terrific locations up in Cortina d'Ampezzo, in the sort of ski resort area. So it's really picturesque. It's a gorgeous film. Sadly, she is dubbed in that film as well. But it's an excellent job, actually. There are some scenes where it's really hard to pick that it isn't her own voice.
And just very quickly, she's also in an Australian film that's part of your season, is that right? Set in Australia?
An Italian film shot here, yep.
Italian film made in Australia.
Yes. Not too many of those. Luigi Zampa, the director, brought his cast and crew out. And Claudia Cardinale and her co-star Alberto Sordi, who was kind of like a Jerry Lewis come Stan Laurel figure, huge star in Italy, co-starred in the film. They went from Broken Hill to Dunk Island and picturesque places in between. And it's a gorgeous film. It's a film that not a lot of Australians know. So,
no, I'm dying to check it out myself.
Oh, please do. We're very lucky that the National Film and Sound Archive has a gorgeous print, so come along and see it.
Roberta Chiabara, thank you so much for coming in to tell us all about this extraordinary program of films with Claudia Cardinale as the focus. I really urge our listeners to check this program out. She's gorgeous for a start. If nothing else, it's just a way of seeing some of the best films ever made. And I'm saying that with all full meaning. I mean, The Leopard, 8.5, Once Upon a Time in the West, these are masterpieces of cinema.
And let's not forget the homoeroticism in The Leopard and Sandra.
Plenty of that. Yeah, Burt Lancaster, those looks he exchanges with Alain Dion. So what's the name?
Alain Delon.
Okay, I was close. Now, the program starts Friday the 19th of February, and it runs through until Sunday the 28th of February. There's a lot more details, of course, on the ACME website, acme.net.au. We'll put a link up on the Carson Kaus Facebook page as well. Roberta, thank you again.
Oh, my pleasure.
We're going to go out to the news now with some of the music from Once Upon a Time in the West. You're on Joy 94.9. Now, I just want to catch up on all the feedback we've had about the John Waters giveaway. Of course, we're giving away a couple of tickets to see This Filthy Word, thanks to MG Publicity. And we've asked you to get in touch with us to tell us what your favourite John Waters film is to go into the running. Now, we've heard from David from Glen Huntly, who puts in a vote for Polyester. Steve from Clifton Hill rang in to talk about John Travolta in Drag, which was actually from the remake of Hairspray that John Waters did endorse. In fact, he was so pleased with the remake, he appeared in it as a flasher. That's his way of saying, I approve. Stephen from South Yarra likes Female Trouble and provided this quote by the fantastic Divine. My name's Dawn Davenport. I'm a thief and shit kicker, and I want to be famous. Thank you for that, Stephen. Jeffrey, who is a recent subscriber, cheers, Jeffrey. He likes Female Trouble and Hairspray, and he just loves the combination of performers that appear in John Waters' films. He also he rang twice just to tell us how much he loves Kathy Davenport. Crane from Paran says, I'd have to say that Hairspray was my favourite John Waters film. In a time before hair straighteners, Ricky Lake improvises and screams, I'm ironing my hair. I probably read that out wrong. But Craig, thank you very much for taking part. And thanks for everybody in our poll. I still love Crybaby, but we've got half an hour yet to see what other people think. We're going to talk to Indigenous filmmaker Richard Franklin next. So I thought I'd play some music from The Tracker. This is the Archie Roach song, The Archie Roach song, Far From Home. You're on the Casting Couch with Thomas and Kylie. This is Joy 94.9.
Hello, my name is Adam Elliott, and I'm the writer and director of the very overrated Harvey Crumpet and Mary and Max. And you used to be above my dad's hardware shop in South Melbourne, but now you've moved to much more luxurious studios. And you're listening to Joy 94.9.
That's right, you're back on the Carson Couch with Thomas and Kylie. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we had Mark Payson talking about outdoor cinemas, and one of the events he mentioned was Black Night Cinema, which is happening next weekend, so Friday the 19th of February, right through until very late Saturday the 20th of February, in Treasury Gardens, completely free entry, and it's going to be a celebration of Indigenous filmmaking. So we're going to have Indigenous film writers, actors and directors there. You're encouraged to bring a blanket and a picnic and to watch the extraordinary collection of films that they've programmed for you. One of the films they're screening is the really funny stoner comedy Stone Brothers, which ran in the cinemas last year. Now, we're now joined on the line by the director of Stone Brothers, Richard Franklin. Are you there, Richard?
G'day, mate. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Now, whereabouts are you? Because when we were talking to you off air, you were standing in a paddock.
That's right. I was at the Terandarra show, and then I went home to finish off fixing a fence.
This is the glamorous life of filmmaking. It doesn't get any better than this, does it?
Yes, I was knee-deep in sheep poo.
Kylie's a filmmaker as well, Richard, so she understands that filmmakers have to juggle a lot of jobs.
It just sounds like a regular day on the set.
Absolutely. Yes. Or trying to get funding for a film covered in poo. it's hard being a filmmaker. You've got to make certain sacrifices. Sometimes get the wool pulled over your eyes, all that type of stuff. It can be difficult.
Now, Indigenous filmmaking over the past 18 months, I get the impression it's really blossomed and it's reached a real high point in Australia at the moment. Would you say the same sort of thing?
Yeah, well, I was. There were several renaissances in Indigenous filmmaking. One of them, of course, was when Jeddah came out, and there was actually Aboriginal people cast in films. Mm. Of course, you had the great Tommy Lewis and Bindi Williams in the movie Stone. You had Bruce McGuinness. He made several films in the 70s. Then you had Tracy Moffat, Brian Siren, Rachel Perkins. And then around that time, a bloke called Wal Saunders, who happens to be my older brother, he got the Australian Film Commission with Kathy Robinson, the then CEO, to create the Indigenous branch, a whole heap of initiatives called Sander Celluloid. And they were the six films came out. I was very fortunate to be one of them. My film was at Cannes then, back in the early 90s, and we all went on to win awards all around the world.
Was that No Way to Forget?
No Way to Forget, that's right.
Yep.
I'm glad you remembered.
Hmm.
And that went on. In fact, Warwick Thornton was part of that. He made, of course, the wonderful Samson and Delilah.
Yes.
And one of his films is actually screening in this Black Knight cinema session as well.
One
of his shorts.
Oh, look, he's a tremendous filmmaker and a lovely bloke too. And if you are talking to him, tell him he still owes me $20.
We did have him on last year. I didn't know that. I should have said that to him.
Yeah. If I'd known, I'd have left an invoice with you. Now there's another renaissance, isn't there? There's three Indigenous filmmakers that have made feature films. And what's great for me is seeing 500 non-Indigenous people sitting in a cinema laughing their guts out with blackfellas, not at us in a negative way.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting that we're making comedies and drama and action films and,
Well, I think that's important, that the stories are, one, contemporary. I think the Rolf de Heer films, Ten Canoes and The Tracker, are absolutely sensational, but I think the next step was making just really good contemporary relevant stories and also films that aren't too important, if you know what I mean. Like, I think the fact that you made a stoner comedy is brilliant.
Well, look, it was just a snapshot of my life back when I had hair and was stoned a lot. No, not really. The reality is that there's drugs out there and people use them, and sometimes they use them to their own detriment. These guys, the heroes in my film, they pre-roll 187 joints, pick up an Aboriginal transvestite and a heavy metal Italian rock god. And God knows we all do that every second week.
I know. Christmas with my in-laws, yeah.
Absolutely. We must have the same in-laws.
Yeah, I know. We can trace them back. What's really cool about Stone Brothers is you do have this kind of stoner comedy element, but you're not lazy about it. You also address the very real issue that drugs can destroy people and communities.
That's right, yeah. And they do. I mean, like, if anyone's got any brain cells left after the 80s and early 90s, most of the people that could still string a sentence together that have used drugs realise that drugs are bad.
Mm.
Too often that we see people using them to anaesthetise themselves against society, and they say they're using it recreationally. And I mean, I don't think that's quite true. I think a lot of people like to numb themselves with all the. Am I allowed to say shit?
Oh, yep. Yes.
All the shit going on in the world.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead,
Richard,
Carly.
I was just wondering, like, you've got such a diverse background and you've done theatre and also directed TV. I was just wondering, what lessons have you learnt from that has translated into making a feature?
Look, I think that it's, given that I come from a specific cultural background, I mean, I'm very lucky. My father's non-Aboriginal and my mum's Aboriginal. I celebrate all my cultures and I'm a very, very proud Australian. I think that we've got a lot to do to heal this country, but it doesn't make me any less proud of the fact that I am an Australian Aboriginal and Gundijimara. The lesson I learnt is to collaborate across cultures, is to... Sometimes your best ideas can come from the least likely people or least likely elements. I found it very hard in the commercial television industry. In fact, Blue Heelers were the only group that would employ me.
That's
everyone
amazing.
Else... even though I'd won awards all over the world and topped the ratings with some of my Healers episodes, I was still a black filmmaker. I wasn't a man. I wasn't a filmmaker.
Mm. That's amazing.
Well, when I got the gig on Blue Healers, I was shocked to be a man, to be treated like a man. It was just absolutely astounding. In fact, I don't think since Blue Healers I've ever had one script sent to me ever that's just a script without indigenous
characters.
Subject or content matter.
Like The Circuit, for example, or which obviously is fantastic, though it's Indigenous-based again.
Absolutely, and you're placed in the culturally too hard basket, or you're either perceived as a noble savage belonging in the cultural corner or some type of radical agitator, and you can't be just a hide gun. So it's very difficult. My lesson out there is that there's still a lot of... discrimination in this country and that we need to get rid of it. I'm hoping that when my daughter in 20 years' time is out in the world and doing her thing and my son, and I'm hoping that they get treated as human beings who happen to be Indigenous, not Indigenous human beings.
Well, I think there's a lot to learn from that, and certainly for a gay and lesbian radio station, I'm sure that we, being another minority, that sometimes we are seen for our orientation rather than as people. I think that we can relate a lot to that as well. So it's amazing that, you know, you've got your first feature up, and that is absolutely fantastic. And these screenings of all of this fantastic Black Night cinema is going to be a great outdoor weekend, I think, next weekend.
It's going to be great fun. One of the great things about making a comedy was I was up there at the Dungog Film Festival, which is a tremendous festival.
Yeah.
There's 500 non-Indigenous people, and I made the speech and walked off the stage. And as I'm walking down, there was some elderly non-Indigenous people sitting there with crossed arms, and I'm thinking, oh, God, what's going to happen? You know? They're all sort of glaring at me, but they were probably more nervous than me. And I sat down, and 10 minutes in, they were laughing, and 20 minutes in, they were slapping each other and laughing. 30 minutes in, they were turning around and slapping me, and in a good way.
So hopefully next weekend there'll be similar reactions.
No one slap me, please.
An affectionate pat or a...
An affectionate pat.
A thumbs up.
Though I did meet a dominatrix on the plane when the film was screening. She never slapped me either, so...
So, Richard, your film is going to be playing the Saturday, the 20th of Feb, at 7:30.
That's right.
That sound
and
right to you?
The mandatory dress is formal mankinis.
Formal mankinis? Oh,
that's it.
Oh,
possum
wow.
Skin. Possum skin if you're traditional.
I love it.
Are you going to be there introducing? Is that right? Or
I'll be there. I've got to sing a song or two.
Fantastic.
What do you think? A bit of Roger Whittaker, perhaps? I don't know.
Roger Whittaker. I'm drawing a blank. Who's Roger Whittaker?
Roger Whittaker. He sang some very old English songs. Very old. Look, really, really old.
Just do some AC/DC. Everyone's into that right now.
Yeah. I thought I'd do some radical songs about land rights.
Oh,
and equality and, you know, Koori hair fusion clinics, things like that.
Koori hair fusion clinics. You heard it here first, people.
That's my next thing, you know, Koori hair, yeah. So.
Don't give away all your best material here, Richard. Please save it for the Treasury Gardens next weekend.
And save it for your next film. Please tell me you're going to be making another film soon.
Look, I don't know. I mean, I'm really enjoying walking around in sheep poo.
Yeah, I was just saying that the other day.
Another day in the office.
I wish I could spend more time doing that.
Absolutely. I'll bring sheep poo down for you, okay?
Yep, okay. Treasury Gardens plus sheep's poo.
Yep.
We've been talking to Richard Franklin, the director of Stone Brothers, which is showing next Saturday night here. Richard, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us.
Absolute pleasure. And if you're ever down my way, come and walk in sheep poo with me. We'll bond.
Yeah, I will take you up on that, sir.
You're with Thomas and Carly on the casting couch. This is Joy 94.9.
Hello, this is Julie Zamira from Rockquiz, and you're on the casting couch here on Joy, 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 Joy. I do mind sound effects.
Indeed you are. You're on air with Thomas and Kylie here on the casting couch. Just before those messages, I played a piece of music from Rabbit Proof Fence. That was a song called Cloudless by Peter Gabriel. Peter Gabriel being the world music guy he is, of course, incorporating lots of Indigenous sounds in that song.
It's amazing.
Yeah. How fun was Richard Franklin?
Fantastic.
We love
him. I want to
him.
Go down and help him fix his fence. I'm not sure how much use I would actually be, but it sounds like fun.
Yeah, I'll hold things. I'll hold nails. Yeah. I'm almost reluctant to talk about this next film.
Get it over with, but like a Band-Aid. Just pull it off quickly.
We'll do it fast. I dragged myself along to see The Wolfman the other day. Now, I was aware from the start that it probably wasn't going to be a great film. The original director walked off. It's been delayed and delayed and delayed, and they've re-edited a number of times. This is never a good sign.
No.
It's finally got a release, and I, like many other people, were very less than impressed. Now, it's a remake. Well, it's a loose-ish remake. It stays fairly close to the structure of the original 1941 Universal monster film, The Wolfman.
Funny enough, they've really worked hard on the title.
I don't know what else you could call it, though. Apparently, this is a bit of a project of Benicio del Toro. He's been wanting to bring this to the screen for a while. And he, in this new film, plays the lead, a guy called Lawrence Talbot. It's set in 1891. And Lawrence has just returned to his English home after the death of his brother. What has happened to his brother? There's no mystery. You see it as the film opens.
Over the title credits, the whole story's given
away. Almost. You see a werewolf taking his brother. All the villagers say a werewolf took him. Yet we still have to wait and wait and wait for this film to finally get to the point where the characters reveal the fact that, oh, yes, indeed, a werewolf is responsible. The pacing in that way is tedious. It's like, come on, get up to speed like the rest of us. This is... Such a laboured film. The signposting, as I was mentioning, is horribly blatant. The special effects are quite forgettable. It does have this gorgeous production design at first, and I'm thinking, oh, this could be a bit of a throwback to those old Hammer horror films. It looks a bit Sleepy Hollow, Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow. Does nothing with it. The transformation into the werewolf works much better in An American Werewolf in London, the John Landis film, which is going back to 1981.
Haven't special effects progressed since then? Surely. Yeah. We can do better.
I think the effects on a technical level are better. They're just not used in a very exciting way. I was so bored. In fact, I wanted to walk out of the cinema. The only reason I sat there and watched the whole film is so I could have the right to really bitch about it like I'm doing now. And because I knew I was going to be talking about it on this show. We've got Anthony Hopkins as the father, the patriarch. And I don't know whether it's some kind of stylized acting, but he just sounded bored. Emily Blunt's in there.
Now, I love Emily Blunt.
Yeah, a lot of people... I'm indifferent to Emily Blunt.
Well, can I just say, look, I'm not really much of a name dropper, But way back when I was doing the red carpet, we did interview Emily Blunt when she was out here promoting Summer of Love.
No way.
So right before she really took off, I was in a hotel room with her at the Como, did a lovely interview. Oh, so gorgeous. And I have had a soft spot for her ever since.
I don't blame you. That's far more interesting than my review of The Wolfman.
I know.
And what was the film she was promoting?
It was called The Summer of Love, which is up.
Is it the Patty Constantine film?
That's correct.
That's great. Oh, she's in that.
Yes, she plays the mysterious best friend who...
She did too.
Oh, she's amazing. And really, that was the role that catapulted her to... international acclaim, and rightly so. It's a beautiful film. Yeah. You know, great lesbian. Even though when we interviewed them, I did ask, you know, how does it feel to play a lesbian character? And they're like, oh, we never really talked about it. We never really discussed them being lesbians. Actually, I don't even think they said the word lesbian. I think that was, oh, no, we never really, oh, you know, they just really care for each other, but we never really talked about it. So they made this film about this kind of intense, it's an intense friendship.
Yeah, but they didn't want to go there.
But they didn't want to, even though they kind of do go there.
That's really weird.
It's really weird. Anyway, back to the Wolfman.
That strange queeness. Well, look, she's in this. She is the fiancée of the dead brother, and of course, then she has a bit of a love thing going with Del Toro. She's fine. But she really doesn't have much to work with. I mean, you know, women in monster films often don't get very good parts. They're often there to be attacked and then rescued.
Yes.
And there is a bit of a sort of, she falls in love with him, but she knows he's really a beast. You know, it reminded me of Bram Stoker, reminded me of Francis Ford Coppola's version of Dracula with Winona Ryder and Gary Oldman. And I was far more convinced by that film. Doesn't work. Hugo Weaving's in there. He's a Scotland Yard detective who comes in to look at the werewolf things that are happening. The werewolf-ishness activity on the moors.
The werewolf-esque.
The werewolf-esque behaviour. He does all right.
Well, Hugo, he is so solid.
Yeah.
He pretty much could do anything, I think, and make it his own.
Yeah. Yeah, look, and he's good in this. And apparently there's a more of a subplot with him that got cut from the film. And to its detriment, I don't know. I've got to say, when the first werewolf transformation happens, I haven't even mentioned the fact that Del Toro gets bitten and therefore he becomes a werewolf. I think that's obvious. That's where this film is going. When the first transformation happens, I actually did giggle a bit because he sounds and looks a bit like Chewbacca. So if you want to see Chewbacca in the sort of old Victorian waistcoat suit kind of costume,
that's kind of making me feel like I want to see it.
It's kind of fun. Otherwise, I can't.
How else do you get to become a werewolf if you're not bitten by one? Is it hereditary, or is it bitten?
I believe.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
It's very exciting stuff.
I had all these thoughts about going into a whole thing about werewolf mythology and comparing it to the vampire thing, but I couldn't be bothered. No. It's just one that I just don't bother with this film. Really,
what do you give it out of?
I really, really dislike. It's the least fun I've had in the cinema for a long time. So I'm giving it 1 star.
You're still giving it 1 star. You're not even getting like half a star. One star. You're very generous.
Half a star is, I would have to have walked out on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Only one star for the Wolfman. I am sorry, but that's the way it is. Now we are playing Valentine's Day type music. Oh, we've cut off the John Waters giveaway as well. So we'll be back later in the show to tell you who's the lucky person to have won that. Back to the music. Valentine's Day music, playing lots of sort of ironic Valentine's Day music. I'm going to play a song I adore, and actually I discovered, Kylie, you adore as well, that Elvis Costello did with Burt Bacharach. It's from a terrific film called Grace of My Heart. This is God Give Me Strength. You're on the Carson Couch with Thomas and Kylie. And Kylie, we have a winner for the John Waters tickets.
I hope they're a big fan. This is so exciting. This is an exclusive for Joy that we're giving away a double pass to John Waters show. It's great.
This filthy word. Limited tickets, apparently, though, are still available at theartcentre.com.au.
What day is it showing again?
That will be showing Saturday, February the 27th at 8:30 p.m.
Great.
I'll be there. I'm going. I bought tickets the day they came out. So I'll be doing the show and then rushing down. Well, not rushing. I'll have 1.5 hours. So, you know, I might get dinner and just casually walked in all relaxed.
You don't want to hang out at the backstage door kind of waiting for to get
to stalk him.
John's,
or I might.
Order. Maybe you can flash him.
I want to touch his moustache.
Oh, I thought you were going somewhere else with that for a second.
The winner, people are going nuts. They're going, stop rambling, you bastards. Who won? The winner is Jeffrey from Digger's Rest. Congratulations, Jeffrey. He is a recent subscriber to Joy as well, so that's fabulous. And he liked Female Trouble and Hairspray.
Good on you, Jeffrey.
Awesome. All right. Now, I promise you I'm going to play some genuinely romantic music later in the show, but next, my last anti-Valentine's Day song is Screaming Jay Hawkins. I don't know if you've seen Nowhere Boy, but there's a pivotal scene that when the young John Lennon discovers Screaming Jay Hawkins' song, I Put a Spell on You, and that's the song that makes him really get into kind of edgy rock and roll music. I'm not playing that version. I'm playing a version. I'm playing a version that was used on the soundtrack to Lost Highway. It's a cover of I Put a Spell on You by Marilyn Manson.
Aren't we edgy?
It is one of my great thrash around the bedroom in angst songs. So if you don't like things that are a little bit heavy-ish, you might want to do something else for the next 3.5 minutes. But for those of you who want to thrash in anguish with me, here it is. Marilyn Manson, I Put a Spell on You, Joy 94.9. You're on the Casting Couch with Thomas and Kylie. And that was Julie Cruise with Mysteries of Love. Kylie, I thought after the Marilyn Manson track from Lost Highway, we should do something a little bit more soothing.
You wake me up and then you put me to sleep.
That was soothing. That was lovely.
Put me to sleep. You wake me up and you put me to sleep.
The link there was David Lynch films.
Oh, God.
Lost Highway being the track that Marilyn Manson is on, and that song by Julie Cruise, Mysteries of Love, appeared in Blue Velvet.
I'm not sure that's enough to connect them.
Director. That's a musically tenuous.
Musically very tenuous.
Yeah, but there's that director thing. Uh-huh. That's the way I roll. Hey, I've been playing lots of sort of anti-Valentine's Day music, you know, songs about sleazy people picking up or breaking up or being heartbroken. I thought the last piece of music I play in today's show should be one of the all-time great romantic songs from cinema. I don't even know whether I should introduce this. Oh, I will. This is As Time Goes By, sung by Dooley Wilson from Casablanca. You're with Thomas and Kylie on the Casting Couch. Joy 94.9.
You must remember that.
You're on the Casting Couch with Thomas and Kylie on Joy 94.9. Did you like that, Kylie?
I really did. You put on your very, like, this is the midnight midnight hour of Valentine's Day kind of sexy voice.
Love songs and dedication.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Exactly.
That, of course, was Dooley Wilson As Time Goes By from the Casablanca soundtrack. Okay, I'm going to go back to normal now. We've had one hell of a show.
It's been fantastic fun. Thank you so much for having me on.
I've had a ball doing the show with you, Kylie. Thank you so much.
Great. Let's do it next week.
Why don't you come back next week? I was just thinking.
I would love to.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
We've got all sorts of films and interviews lined up for you next week, none of which I can remember off the top of my head, so you'll just have to listen to find out. But it's going to be great. thank you. Lamest forward announce ever. A big thank you to Helen for looking after the news on the show today. And a massive, massive thank you to our two really wonderful and entertaining guests. We had Roberta Chiabara from Acme and the Stone Brothers filmmaker Richard Franklin. Actually, both the projects those two folks are working on start next weekend. Check our Facebook page, The Casting Couch. Become a fan and you can get the details of those programs via Facebook. Thank you to Nick, our podcaster. Our podcasts are happening. They're back up online and they go up usually about Tuesday or Wednesday. Nicely edited. Alan, producer, panelist, thank you again, sir. A big thank you to Warren for looking after the front desk. Thank you to all of you who listened. And congratulations again to Jeffrey, who Warren tells us is thrilled beyond belief for winning the double pass to see John Waters.
I think his partner might have a surprise Valentine's Day present tomorrow.
Yeah, I think his partner's going to do very, very well out of that. Hey, thanks MG Publicity as well for sorting that out for us. We really appreciate it. Thank you, Carly.
Oh, great. We'll see you next week.
We will indeed. Keep listening to Joy 94.9, though, because you're about to get hit with A Touch of Pink by Dennis and Dick. Have a good night.
Good morning, Mr. Phelps. This is your mission, should you choose to accept it. Should you or any member of your IM force be caught or killed, the Secretary will disavow all knowledge of your actions.
The Casting Couch, Joy 94.9's premiere movie show.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.